Creativity without failure, period. Brené Brown. Success is sometimes the outcome of a whole string of failures. Vincent van Gogh. And of course, there's this classic. A setback is a setup for a comeback. Willy Jolie. So wise, and they're all basically saying the same thing. Failure, or more accurately, a temporary setback, is just part of the process. The only way you can truly fail is if you quit, or never even start, pursuing something that you're passionate about. Botched attempts are not the end of the world, so just keep calm and carry on. Yes, I found that on Pinterest too. Redefine failure. I think it's time to stop talking about failure. I realize that it's right there in the title of this chapter, but it's just slowing us down. We've established that failure is quitting something that you care about, and none of us are going to do that now, so let's move on. When you're working on a painting, a book, a song, and it doesn't turn out the way you had originally planned, that's not failure. That's learning. That's experimentation, prototype number one, and most important, it's your jumping off point for tomorrow. With the right perspective, instead of getting stopped, you can use these lessons to propel yourself forward. Setbacks can be a gift, depending on how you look at them. The gift that gives back. When you roll up your sleeves and try something new and it goes horribly wrong, you can look at the result in two ways. One, the failure can inspire you to keep going. If this new endeavor is something that you are passionate about, something that you want to master, then get up tomorrow and try again, and again, and again, and again, until you're happy with the results. Maybe you'll need classes, a mentor, a lot of time to practice, or all of the above. But if you love what you're doing, then this will be a fun adventure full of trials, errors, and a perfect excuse to experiment every day. Two, on the other side of the coin, failure can also be a wonderful gift. How is that even possible, you ask? Well, it can help you realize that certain paths just aren't for you, setting you free to try something else, something that you will love, enjoy, and be excited about. Oh look, here comes another inspirational quote. I'd rather be a failure at something I love than a success at something I hate. George Burns. Well said, Mr. Burns. In my case, this was painting. I graduated with a BFA as a painting major. So this meant I was supposed to be a painter, right? Painting was always a struggle for me, but I refused to quit. I continued to ram this square peg into its round hole. After my painting professor said, "You should never paint again," in that dreaded critique at the end of my degree, see chapter 7, I took it literally. Mind you, I also stopped making art of any kind. When I did start playing around again, I found myself making mixed media collages. These pieces came easily to me. Therefore, in my mind, they didn't count as real art. They weren't paintings, and it wasn't a struggle. Obviously, this was not art with a capital A. This lasted for more years than I care to admit. Finally, after Creative Block was released, it dawned on me that I was being a giant hypocrite. I was telling other people how to get past their blocks, yet I was terrified to pick up a paintbrush. I decided that it was time to paint again, whether I liked it or not. I went to my studio every day for about 2 weeks, trying to push through, waiting for it to get fun. I made ugly paintings. I had a little stack of paper so I wouldn't worry about ruining the expensive canvases I bought. I followed all of my own advice, but it wasn't working. Talk about feeling like a failure. But wait, here comes the revelation. Every time I sat down to paint, I'd find myself wishing that I was cutting and pasting found images instead. All I wanted to do with my precious scheduled studio time was make collages. So why wasn't I? And exhale. In that moment, I completely let painting go and embraced collage, because it is the kind of making that brings me that childlike joy that I mentioned in chapter 1. It rarely occurs to me to worry if other people like what I'm making. I love it, and that's all that matters. So, the next time you're in the studio, think about what you really want to be doing. It may even be something that you haven't tried before. Whatever it is, give it a whirl. You might happen upon the biggest aha moment of your creative life. You say failure, I say feedback. Up until now, we've mostly focused on self-perceived failure. But how do you get back up and keep working after someone else deems your work a failure? Your play is panned. Your novel gets rejected by the publisher. You didn't sell any paintings at your latest show. This is not a failure. It's feedback. And besides, there is success wrapped up in that as well. You had an art show. You wrote a novel, directed a play. Feedback can be invaluable if you turn it around and make it work for you. Listen carefully. Take the pieces that can make your work stronger and toss out the rest. Negative feedback is not a reason to quit. It's a setback, a bruise, a chance to readjust and then move forward. And you get to decide if you agree with the comments or not. Just getting a bad review doesn't mean something is a failure. Somewhere out there, a film critic hates your favorite movie. Clearly not a failure in your eyes. Or consider the Impressionist painters. In 1863, their paintings were rejected by the all-important Paris Salon. But those artists didn't give up their innovative way of seeing the world. Instead, they celebrated this rejection by starting their own exposition, the Salon des Refusés, Exhibition of Rejects. They believed in what they were doing and turned their failure into one of art history's most popular movements. There is perfection in imperfection. In my own work, I do everything by hand. My hand will always be imperfect because it's human. If I spend a lot of time going over the line and over the line, trying to make it straight, I will never be able to make it straight. You can always see the line waver. And I think that's where the beauty is. Margaret Kilgallen. This is one of the most beautiful and freeing quotes I've ever read about creative perfection. There is no such thing. And in fact, beauty actually lies in the imperfection. Have you ever seen a perfect piece of art or read a perfect book? Me neither. Yet so many of us hold ourselves up to an insanely high standard. If it's not perfect, we won't do it. The only thing that this results in is a head full of perfect ideas that never make it onto paper. Wouldn't it be so much more satisfying to set those ideas free, wavering lines and all? Of course. And even if you end up with a floor full of crumpled paper, you just spent an entire day being creative. That in itself is a victory. And the next morning, when you wake up and pick up your pencil again, those imperfect scraps will be your new starting point. Never not be making. Don't think about making art, just get it done. Let everyone else decide if it's good or bad, whether they love it or hate it. While they're deciding, make even more art. Andy Warhol. You must be willing to get in there every day and just try things, while being totally open to imperfection. Not every idea will become a masterpiece, and that's fine. Your studio is a safe place to play. No one needs to know about projects that don't go anywhere. And remember, all projects go somewhere. They all lead to the next piece, either by teaching us something good or something not so good. The top corner of your collage may be brilliant, even if the rest of it sucks. So, tomorrow, start there. Your short story may be rough around the edges, but that third sentence is a real beauty and could be the beginning of your award-winning novel. Create new starting points for yourself every day. Experiment, make mistakes, play some more. This is the path to genius. In fact, let's get started with a few experiments right now. Find brilliance in the scraps. Remember all that crumpled paper on the floor? That's where we'll start. Grab a stack of paper and go for it. Don't be precious about what you're doing to that paper. Spend at least 30 minutes sketching, writing, or whatever floats your boat. As you finish each doodle or sentence, crumple it tightly and toss it on the ground. When you're ready, choose one random papery ball off the floor. Uncrumple it, and voila, that is your starting point for today's experiment. Explore that idea in any way you like. Everything else gets recycled or flipped over to be used later. Not every scrap on the floor will lead to a masterpiece, but there is brilliance down there. You just have to push yourself to find it. Be present, a 30-day challenge. A quick daily assignment is the perfect way to become creatively present in your everyday life. This is a 30-day challenge that will make you notice the world around you in a whole new way. Where to start? Here's a list of 30 things and concepts so that you have no excuse not to start today. Interpret these jump starters any way you like. Photographs, short stories, drawings. Have fun. Creative jump starter ideas. 1. Water. 2. Circle. 3. Texture. 4. Fly. 5. 6. New. 7. Upside down. 8. Horizon. 9. Open. 10. Vintage. 11. Blue. 12. Mirror. 13. Cold. 14. Lines. 15. Noisy. 16. Boat. 17. Pattern. 18. Fur. 19. Bright. 20. sweetness. 21, balance. 22, cold. 23, intersection. 24, peak. 25, grow. 26, red. 27, twins. 28, simple. 29, delicious. 30, twilight. Play nicely with others. Chapter 9 is just around the corner, and it's all about sharing your work with other people and creating your creative tribe. So, in the spirit of playing nicely with others, choose a friend for this jump starter. That friend can live in your area or on the other side of the planet. If you're a visual artist, then both of you will fill an envelope with found images, scraps of paper, stickers, whatever you've got in the studio that you feel works for this. Pack it up and give it or mail it to your friend. You'll receive a packet from your partner. Each of you will then make 3 collages from each other's scraps. If you're a writer, do the same with a list of random phrases. You can pull these words from wherever you like. Overheard conversations, spam subject lines, the dictionary. This is fun, keeps you honest. You don't want to be the jerk who doesn't follow through when your friend is busy working away. And it's a wonderful way to start sharing your work with other people. It also gives you an automatic starting point, helping with that blank paper issue from chapter 4. Blank paper can be blinding. All of these quick experiments are both beginnings and endings. Think of this process as a cycle. When you finish one thing successfully, it doesn't mean that you're done, and it definitely doesn't mean that everything from here on out will be easy. Even the creative greats are always still learning, hitting roadblocks, trying again, evolving their work. Wouldn't it be boring anyway to master your craft in the first week? Push yourself out of your comfort zone and never not be making, trying new things, picking those crumpled pages off the floor. The art show, the published novel, the hit song is not the success. Those events are just the celebration and the cherry on top of all your hard work. True success is loving the process, being creative every day, and failing like a genius. When we stop fearing failure, we start being artists. Anne Voskamp, author. Chapter 9, Creating in a Vacuum Sucks. Vacuums are dark and dusty, and clearly not a place for creativity to flourish, yet so many of us insist on setting up shop in there. Your lovely, sunny studio might as well be a dust-filled vacuum if it's a place where you tenaciously protect your work from the world. But that vacuum has an off switch, and you can get out of there today. Creative tribes, trusted voices, and encouraging dust bunny-free friends are ready and waiting for you to step out into the light. Sucking source. Where does our reluctance to share our work come from? When did it start? In Chapter 1, Everyone is Creative, we talked about how much fun it was to make things when we were kids. Drawings proudly taped to the fridge, songs sung at the top of our lungs. Back in those glorious days, it never would have occurred to me to hide my art away. Which makes me wonder, when did that vacuum get plugged in, and who flipped the on switch? Oh, I think that might have been me. Somewhere along the way, creativity may have become a solo act for you too, and hiding your work away started to seem like a smart idea. If it's tucked away in your studio, no one can see it. If no one can see it, no one can criticize it. Perfect. If you've ever received a bad critique, it's understandable not to be interested in getting feedback. We sometimes convince ourselves that sharing our work would only result in a humiliating negative experience, so instead we work alone, not showing anything to anyone. But keeping your work hidden, gathering dust, that sucks too. Whether it was harsh criticism you faced in art school, rude feedback from a gallery or publisher, or nasty quips from an unsupportive family member, those may hurt the most, it's your job to stay out of the vacuum. Blaming your critics feels like an easier way to go, but ultimately it comes down to you. Remember what we learned in Chapter 7, no one can wrestle the pencil out of your hand? Well, no one else can put your work in a vacuum either. Let the sun shine in. Of course, go ahead and enjoy your creative alone time. Work in your studio, office, with only a hot cup of joe and your favorite music to keep you company. Having no distractions is a wonderful, luxurious thing. When you're finished or feeling stuck, it's time to unlock the door and show somebody what's going on in there. Creativity needs sunshine to grow, not just daylight. Don't expose your work to just anyone for the sake of putting it out into the world. Creativity requires warmth and nurturing from trusted sources in order to flourish. It cannot bloom in a dark space like a lonely studio with dusty shelves, or worse, left as an idea to roll around in your head, never to be brought to life. Your work needs to be created and shared with a supportive audience. Easier said than done, yes? Here's how to start. 1. Share with the universe. Before you reach out to anyone else, have a little chat with the universe. Write a letter explaining exactly what you want. You may crave a fulfilling art career, but what specifically does that mean to you? Selling a painting for more than $500? Landing a gallery show or a book deal? Seeing your work in a national publication? Tuck this letter away in a safe spot and reread it occasionally, or lock it away for a designated period of time. Later, you'll be shocked by how many of your goals will have been realized in a relatively short period. I put my letter away and then totally forgot about it for almost 2 years. When I accidentally found it, folded neatly into the back of one of my notebooks, more than half of my wish list had already happened. I guess the universe was listening. Or maybe, by taking the time to think through what I wanted, and also physically write it down, those goals became less fuzzy in my mind and were able to find their way subliminally to the top of my priority list. Just a hunch. 2. Fake it till you make it. Go ahead. Tell people that you're an artist, a writer, filmmaker, etc., even if you don't completely believe it yet. The first step in sharing your work is owning the fact that you're a creative person and a valid part of the creative community. When you own that title and share it with others, it exposes you to a whole world that you might not be tapping into if you instead choose to say, "Oh, I'm not an artist, I work in a cubicle." Remember, you can totally be both. See Chapter 3, Labels Are for Canned Peaches, Not People. 3. Show your work to other human beings. This is where things get scary. The moment you show your work to another living, breathing human, you open your work up to criticism. I almost said you're opening yourself up to criticism, but we have learned, see Chapter 7, No One Can Wrestle the Pencil Out of Your Hand, that criticism of your work is not criticism of you as a person. The key is to share with people you trust, people who will give you constructive feedback. They may have suggestions about new ways that you can look at your work, and if you trust them and respect their opinions, this kind of criticism, feedback, will make you better at whatever it is you do. That is an invaluable gift for any creative person. I know this list very well, as I've lived all 3 steps outlined above. It took me years to figure it out, so I'm trying to get you there a little faster. I wrote my letter to the universe. Through clenched teeth, I started telling people that I was an artist. I still wasn't showing my work to anyone, though, until I found myself in the middle of a giant creative block with a deadline looming. I realized that it was finally time to open the studio door and ask for help. Find your tribe. The quest to find your people may seem daunting, but it delivers a huge reward. I enjoyed one of the most creative, collaborative afternoons ever at a time when I suffered from major creative block around a gallery show I was due to hang. I took a deep breath and mustered the courage to approach 2 local artists for advice. I didn't know Jessica Bell and Sarah G. Miller very well, but I emailed them anyway. We met. Those wonderful women listened, shared their own experiences, and talked me straight out of my crippling creative block. From that day forward, I was a believer in the power of reaching out. It can be insanely helpful to share with the right people. I had started to create my tribe. To this day, I'm on the lookout for smart, caring, talented people to add to the roster. If you are still trying to assemble your creative crew, these tips might help. Just do 1 or try a combination of all 3. Write down the names of 3 people you trust and admire creatively. They may or may not be the people to whom you confessed your green eye jealousy. See Chapter 5, A Green Eye is a Green Light. Invite them, 1 at a time, to meet, in person or on Skype, and tell them you'd like to get their feedback on your work, life, whatever. After what will hopefully be a truly interesting conversation, and before you say goodbye, ask them to write down 3 positive things about what you're working on. Put that list somewhere special and call on it when your inner critic is getting feisty. Words from these people, who you trust and admire, should hold much more weight than your inner critic's jabs. Once you've connected with everyone you've invited on the copy dates, why not bring all of them together? Start a creative group that meets regularly so that you can be creative together. One of the most fun ways to do this is to start a bad art night. Set out with the goal of creating the worst thing you've ever painted, drawn, sewn, or written. The results will be hilarious, and because you've made the ugliest thing possible, there will be nowhere for your work to go but up. These creative groups are not only a safe environment to experiment with new ideas, they're also a great place to get more comfortable with showing other people what you're creating. You can't hide your process when it's all happening on the same table. And while you're there, remember to be generous with supportive feedback for the other members of your newly formed club because, as Mom always said, treat others the way you want to be treated. If you prefer to create in the quiet of your own space, you can do a different kind of get-together by forming a group that meets regularly to discuss finished work or work in progress. American painter Leah Giberson told me about a fantastic group that she and some of her friends started 2 years after graduating art school. They missed the mutual support and feedback that they'd gotten when they were students, so they decided to meet once a month to share their work in a typical art school critique format, each artist taking a turn to show her work. According to Leah, there was definitely still criticism, but it was always constructive. Because they trusted each other's opinions, they could share what they were working on, discuss any trouble they might be having, and give and take advice in a supportive environment. She said, "It was important to each of us that we encourage one another to push beyond our comfort zones and continue to grow as artists." Leah also shared this insightful gem with me, which is a perfect throwback to Chapter 2, Excuses Are the Enemy, and is helpful on so many levels. Most of us in the group had full-time jobs and or young children, which made it difficult to get much studio time. Without the monthly commitment to our group, it would have become all too easy for many of us to let our art fall to the side. Instead, our monthly studio visits created deadlines that encouraged us to make new art, even if in spurts, and continue feeling like working artists. Note, if you can't organize a group like this in the place where you live, you can find your tribe online. Private Facebook groups are perfect for this, as long as your group is filled with people you trust. Leah's story is a wonderful example of the importance of finding your tribe. Having others to rely on is an effective way to prevent creative relapses. Sometimes when you're on your own, or feel like you're on your own, you may slip back into old patterns, not making time for your work, stopping yourself before you start, listening to your inner critic. By being a part of a group, even just a group of two, you've got someone cheering for you on the days when you feel like quitting. It's also a really great excuse to hang out with fun, like-minded people on a regular basis. When you should not share. Although I just spent most of this chapter saying how important it is to share your work and to let it out into the light, there are two important exceptions. 1. Don't share big ideas with small thinkers. If you know that someone is negative, do not share your work with him or her. You know who I'm talking about. In most cases, it will slow you down or stop you completely and will add fuel to your inner critic's fire. No good can come from that. No good, I say. 2. Don't share with the entire world until you're ready. You don't have to share everything. With social media in every corner of our lives, it may feel like you should be posting, tweeting, pinning every sketch, video, piece of prose. You don't have to and you shouldn't. Share when you're ready, when you're proud, and when you want genuine feedback. That's what your tribe will give you. Internet trolls, on the other hand, are a little less supportive. Once you feel confident enough to ignore them, go forth and tweet to your heart's content. See Chapter 7, No One Can Wrestle the Pencil Out of Your Hand, for more thoughts on dealing with online criticism. A vacuum is a very lonely place, with room for only one person. How can you host a bad art night or feedback group in a vacuum? Well, you can't. There's not nearly enough room for all of the chairs and snacks you will need, so it's time to get out of there. Immediately. If you don't already have a creative tribe, today is the day. A few paragraphs back, I asked you to write down the names of 3 people that you could reach out to. If you haven't written that list yet, do it right here, right now, in those super wide margins. And then take action. Just imagine how thrilled you'd be if someone invited you out on a creative coffee date. Exactly. Chapter 10. Blocks Are Meant to be Broken. Here we are, the final chapter. I did it. I wrote a whole book. Almost. The only thing left to do is write a chapter about creative blocks. And I've got nothing. In fact, I Googled creative block to see if any fog-clearing information would pop up to save me. I found a huge number of top 10 lists, articles, videos. Oh, and my book, Creative Block. We know, you already wrote about that. Can you possibly say anything else on this topic that people will actually find helpful? Well, yes, now that you mention it, I have quite a bit more to say on this subject. Thank you for your feedback. Boom, beat him at his own game. As soon as Creative Block hit shelves in 2014, almost overnight I was seen as an expert on Creative Blocks and was invited to speak at all sorts of places, from high schools to Pixar to Oprah Studios. I was there to share insights that I had gleaned from writing the book, which I did. But I cannot even tell you how many personal aha moments I experienced in the months following the release, thanks to everyone I met along the way. I heard countless teary-eyed Me Too stories from people who thought that they were the only ones ever to experience a depressing, creativity-halting block. I was given block-bashing tips and tricks by little kids, creative professionals, and senior citizens. I drank a lot of coffee and had long, deep, interesting discussions with so many amazing people about what it meant to be blocked and ways that we could all find our way out of that dark box. Those enlightening conversations and experiences are what this book is truly about. I should not be the only one to benefit from all of those moments. I want to share these ideas so that all of us can knock down those blocks and find our way to the other side. Let's begin with the biggest aha moment of them all. Blocks are just part of the deal. That does seem rather simple for my biggest revelation, but it is that uncomplicated. Blocks will happen. Not only are blocks proof that you're human, they're also your ticket into a very cool club, a club filled with every other creative person in the world. You should never feel ashamed about being blocked. In fact, I think blocks should be worn as one of your club membership badges. The moment you accept that blocks are just part of the process, that they will happen, suddenly this whole thing becomes a lot less scary. Easy as 1, 2, 3. This was my next realization. In Creative Block, I asked artists how they dealt with the inevitable block, and three very common ingredients came up over and over again. Here is a trio of block-breaking antidotes that every creative person should have in his or her back pocket. 1. Embrace imperfection. 2. Get into the great outdoors. 3. Make rules. Now, what do you do with these remedies? You can combine them into one giant block-knocking solution, or you can savor each one on its own. Imperfection. That's right, screw perfection. Celebrate imperfection instead. There's no such thing as a perfect painting, a perfect book, a perfect song, so why worry about trying to achieve that? Besides, more often than not, imperfection is far more interesting than perfection. Embrace the happy accidents. They might just lead you to something totally new. See Chapter 8, Failure Leads to Genius. The Great Outdoors. Yes, go outside. If you're in the middle of a block, I can almost guarantee that sitting in your studio, staring at a blank page, is not going to bring you the inspiration you're looking for. Open the door and head out into the world, if only for an hour. Fresh air and new surroundings go a long way when it comes to getting through a block. See Roll the Dice at the end of this chapter for a fun way to be creative outside. Rules. This keeps coming up. So many successful creative people swear by rules. As mentioned earlier in the book, one of the best ways out of a block is to set constraints for yourself and then play within them. In Chapter 4, Blank Paper Can Be Blinding, you'll find the top 10 rules to play within. Storm before the calm. Here you are, doing everything right. Your inner critic is slowly becoming your inner cheerleader, you're sharing with trusted sources, and you've accepted that blocks are just part of the process. Why, then, is it still so upsetting when your idea tank is on empty? Because it is. It's distressing, frustrating, and really annoying. I think everyone wishes that creativity would just flow with the turn of a tap, but it doesn't always work that way. This was my next big light bulb moment. Even if you're at the top of your game, you will have days when you feel sad, mad, and frustrated because of a block. That, unfortunately, is also part of the deal. The tortured artist syndrome again. My advice? Don't beat yourself up for feeling this way. It's normal. But at the same time, don't get stuck down there. Remind yourself, insistently, that you won't feel like this forever. Toronto-based artist Amanda Happe has a very insightful perspective on blocks. I think I might get creative blocks all the time, but haven't thought of them that way. I frequently have nothing interesting to say. Those strike me as great times to keep creatively quiet. I think we're too hard on ourselves if we expect uninterrupted procession of meaningful creation. Let it be, but lay in wait. Keep your ears perked and your soul soft for that new impulse. Brilliant. Eliminate the source. Sometimes you just feel stuck and you're not even sure why. Blocks can come from so many places, and the sooner you identify the source, the sooner you can address it and potentially limit future blocks. Think of it like a plumber trying to figure out what's clogging a pipe. You have to get in there, poke around, and get things flowing again, or you're going to have a huge mess on your hands. Here are a few of the most common obstructions. Inner critic. It's hard not to blame this guy for everything, but obviously the inner critic is a major factor in pretty much every creative block. I almost didn't write this chapter because that voice was telling me I couldn't. If that voice gets too loud and persuades you to quit, then it wins, and you're the one that suffers. But when you quiet your inner critic by getting up every day and failing like a genius, getting out of that lonely vacuum and turning a green eye into a green light, it's almost impossible to be blocked. Remember, you're the boss. Outside criticism. I won't sugarcoat this one. It is hard, and probably my biggest source of blocks. Harsh, hurtful criticism can be like a giant boulder tossed in the middle of your creative path. Sometimes the unhelpful words come from people you know. Other times the messages are delivered by complete strangers with too much time on their hands and too many social media accounts. Not only does it sting when it happens, but it can also make you put walls up, stopping you cold. My tactic for years was simply to create nothing. My imperfect logic was, if I don't make anything, no one can say anything mean. So how do you knock those walls down? More outside feedback. I know, that is likely the last thing you want at this point. But take a deep breath and reach out to that wonderful group of trusted sources that you've surrounded yourself with. They might think you need to take a new look at what you're doing too, but they will deliver it in a way that leaves you feeling excited, motivated, and ready to start working again. Deadlines. Your project is due and you've got nothing. Insert giant block here. Deadlines are an interesting thing. In some ways, a wonderful motivator. They force you to stop procrastinating. In another way, they're terrifying. That looming deadline can make you feel like a deer in headlights. Here's some very practical advice on this, given to me by countless creative professionals. When you're working on a project with a deadline, build in time to be blocked right up front. If you know it will take you about 2 weeks to complete this work, then allow yourself a full month, because it's just a given that blocks will happen. It's not a big deal, just a fact. Give yourself permission to have blocks and stops and starts. It will take the pressure off. Commissions. Somebody loves your work and wants you to create something just for them. Wonderful. Yet strangely scary at the same time. Suddenly you're not free to do whatever you want, and you may start to freeze up. Don't forget, they hired you. They want you to do what you do best, so do it. And if you read the previous paragraph, I know you'll be sure to build some time to be blocked into your schedule. Life. Oh yeah, that. Day-to-day life is a huge source of creative blocks. Breakups, moving, stressful work situations, kids on summer break, the list goes on. When life is happening all around you, very often the first thing to go is your frivolous, totally selfish, creative time. Thanks, inner critic. But I have a theory about that. In order to get through the stuff that life throws at you, continuing to be creative may be exactly what helps get you through. You might think of creativity like exercise. When you're overwhelmed by life, the last thing you want to do is go for a run or to the gym. But in fact, it may make you feel better. Make time and space for creativity, even when there seems to be no time or space for anything. It will have an energizing effect. Knock a block. We've established that blocks will happen, so you may as well figure out a fun exit strategy. Throughout this book, there are tips and tricks and lists of exercises that can help you do exactly that. Here's a little cheat sheet to help you find all of them quickly. Chapter 1, see page 19, Projects from the Kindergarten Drawer. Chapter 2, see page 28, Are You Serious? Chapter 3, see page 46, Fill the Can. Chapter 4, see page 57, Top 10 Rules to Play Within. Chapter 5, see page 68, Your Green Light Assignment. Chapter 6, see page 77, Turn the Critic into a Cheerleader. Chapter 7, see page 92, Turn Criticism into Creative Fuel. Chapter 8, see page 105, Never Not Be Making. Chapter 9, see page 115, Find Your Tribe. Need more? No problem. Here are 5 more block-breaking tips. 1. Work in the moment. Don't worry about what's coming next, what you'll make, when you'll get out of the block. Just do, right now. If you spend your time and energy worrying instead of creating, you'll never get to the creating part. It's possible to spend years thinking about what you should be making. The desire for perfection is sometimes paralyzing. Start forcing yourself to make at least 3 or 4 quick pieces every week, even if you think they are terrible. With this production schedule, you will see the light at the end of the tunnel. Remember this tip from Chapter 4. Prepare a stack of cheap and cheerful surfaces ahead of time so you will be less focused on that one perfect expensive canvas in front of you. That one perfect expensive canvas that you've been terrified to ruin. With a stack of paper and no pressure for perfection, you can just go. Toss what you've done on the floor if it sucks, grab the next sheet, try again. That one will most likely suck a little less, and so on. Try it. 2. Do something mundane. Years ago, when I took improv comedy classes at Second City, my brilliant teacher there, Frank, said the best way to tap into the creative side of your brain is to do really boring, everyday stuff. Have you ever noticed that great ideas pop into your head when you're in the shower, or washing the dishes, or driving across town? When your left brain is busy taking care of utilitarian jobs, your right brain is free to let loose and get creative. As mentioned in Chapter 2, it can help to procrastinate with purpose. I get into a groove by cutting bits and pieces from my thrift shop book collection. Not creative, just very methodical. Its wonderful side effect? It almost always sparks a ton of ideas. 3. Roll the dice. This is one of my favorite block-breaking activities. It is a project from Creative Block, given to us by Australian ceramicist Mel Robson. Choose a mode of transport, bike, train, foot, bus, car, roller skates, unicycle. Throw a die to determine how long you will stay on that mode of transportation. A 3 followed by a 2 means you stay on for 32 minutes. A 2 followed by a 4 means you stay on for 24 minutes. Ready? Go. Ride for this amount of time and then stop. This is where you can spend the next hour, as long as you feel safe. Explore, observe, collect, walk around, watch, draw, talk, sing, listen, sit. Take photos, record sounds, whatever takes your fancy. Just explore somewhere new. Really take notice. The idea is just to let something completely random perhaps lead you to something new. When you've got fresh air, new surroundings, and an interesting adventure, there's not a lot of room for blocks. Grab a die and get out there. 4. Keep bedside notes. Keep a notebook beside your bed. Right before you go to sleep, write a few paragraphs about your current project and what about it is frustrating you. Go to sleep, and then as soon as you wake up, write about the project again. Sometimes a good night's sleep and a weird dream will help get ideas moving. 5. Do what you hate. If all else fails, do something that you really don't want to do, like your taxes. Suddenly doing something creative will seem like a much better alternative. The zone. All right, let's stop focusing on being blocked and talk about that magical, time-defying, golden place that dwells on the other side of blocks, the zone. Ideas are flowing. You don't want to stop for food or bathroom breaks, and heaven help anyone who tries to interrupt you. Sometimes you just accidentally arrive here, on days when you least expect it. Other times you have to push on the door a little harder. All of the exercises above can help you with that. You might start out playing around with a little project that seems simple or silly, but before you know it, the creative sparks are flying, the music gets turned up, and suddenly it's 3 a.m. This is what it's all about. Those perfect moments when you are just making, writing, creating, living. Relish it, roll around in it, and pay attention to how amazing it feels. The next time you're stuck, trust that the zone is waiting for you on the other side, and it will be magical. Welcome to the club. Well, there you have it. 10 truths about what it means to be a creative person. Experimenting, carving out time for creativity, finding your tribe, making criticism work for you, The repeating themes within these truths overlap and intersect, and when woven together, they make up the intricate tapestry that is a creative life. There will be snags here and there, but this creative journey is made even more beautiful and interesting by a bit of imperfection thrown in for good measure. It is not a simple thing to be a creative person. It's emotional, it's exciting and rewarding and challenging. The one thing a creative life does not have to be, however, is lonely. We are not alone. By standing up and owning our I Am Creative labels, we have automatically been initiated into a giant creative club with members of all ages, all skill levels, from every corner of the world. The 10 truths laid out in the 10 chapters of this book apply to every single member of this club. Even the greats, who appear to have it made, experience days when the ideas just don't show up. But that's okay, because they will pick up their pencils and try again tomorrow. The other benefit to membership? You have a huge creative tribe to call on whenever you need them. Whether you want someone to bounce ideas around with, or you're looking for a shoulder to cry on after some unwanted criticism, or even better, you need someone to pop the champagne with when it's time to celebrate a creative success. I hope that this book, with its advice, stories, and project ideas, will bring you a truckload of life-changing revelations. Remember the joy in creating just to create. Embrace the wavering line, and tell your jerk of an inner critic to take it down a notch, or he won't make it through the clubhouse door. Acknowledgements. This book is the culmination of so many moments and lessons that I've been lucky enough to have experienced in the past few years. I met countless people who generously shared their stories, uplifting, funny, and in some cases crushing. Their openness and honesty were beyond inspiring. I am also incredibly grateful to my editor, Kate Woodrow. She convinced me that I was capable of writing 30,000 words and cheered me on when I wasn't so sure that she had been right. Martha Rich is next on my gratitude list. There was no other artist that I could have imagined illustrating this book, and I loved every minute of our collaboration. The next thank you goes not to a person, but to a thing. Booth number 102 at Local. Yes, this entire book was written from a lovely lakeside restaurant in my hometown. They tucked me away in a cozy, quiet corner where I could focus, and then they brought me a lot of coffee. And finally, I thank the two most important people in my life, my husband Greg and my son Charlie. They are the most supportive, loving, and proud cheerleaders in the whole wide world, and I love them more than words can say. The end. Now go make stuff.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Your Inner Critic is a Big Jerk and Other Truths About Being Creative. Written and performed by Danielle Crissa. Executive producer Susie Bright. Producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2016 by Danielle Crissa. Production copyright 2016 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.